truly a pleasure to welcome Matt Grossman, the director of MSU's Institute for Public Policy and Social Research, dubbed IPSR. And so tell our audience what IPSR does and why you're excited to be its director.
Well, our mission is to inform public policy and improve governance in Michigan, and we get to see people throughout their political life cycle, from the time they're interning in the state legislature to the time they're running for office and elected. And we get to cover the issue spectrum and be a part of state politics and policymaking and try to connect the university with what's happening down the road at the state capitol.
So one of the hallmarks of this preparation of future leaders is MPLP, the Michigan Political Leadership Program. I think it now has about 11 graduates that are in the legislature. What would make the graduates of that program sort of different from people who don't go through the program? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, we have some new research that says they're twice as likely to run for office and three times as likely to win elected office. So part of it is just giving people the tools they need to get in positions of responsibility. But then once they get there, we hope that they're able to work across the aisle better. They've had experiences with people in the other party. They tend to keep those friendship networks going, and to understand a little bit better where the other political party is coming from once they get in the legislature or in local government.
We should probably comment that MPLP is an old program, and it is supported by both Democrats and Republicans, who both feel, both parties, their representatives, feeling that this is really important to enhance good governance. Mm-hmm. And that it is sort of fundraised in a variety of events, mostly a dinner in Detroit, a breakfast in Grand Rapids, so that there's really a buy-in by local communities for people who are part of this program. But you're sort of relatively new to your role, so you may want to talk about the program from your perspective. I've been around enough that I was at the first dinner, so.
Well, great. Yes, it's been going for quite some time now, since the early 1990s. I was able to step into an already successful program that has a very large and successful alumni base. So that was nice. I just got to meet the new class of students. So I know that it continues to attract a great future political talent, and it's fun to be a part of training them before they get into the rough and tumble of politics.
For me, the remarkable thing is, if you think about the fundraising that goes with this program, that the partnership among the university, the leadership on the Democratic side, the leadership on the Republican side, has sustained itself for all these years through different power shifts, mm-hmm. different changes in might be core party ideology. But this program has remained something that they felt they needed to support in the spirit of good governance and good listening and active and respectful debate, I would say. So there's a tribute to IPSR for being able to create that kind of environment.
Absolutely, but, and the same is true of our legislative leadership program, which has been going since 1994. We just saw the new class of newly elected legislators, and we're expanding now to target new legislative staff as well. And in all of those programs, we get broad support from the legislative leadership on both sides.
Yeah, this sense of bipartisanism that's so lacking in our public press.
Right.
So hopefully that this program can at least underscore that universities can be very much a part of that over a sustained period of time.
When you look at continuity in the governance process in the state of Michigan, and my dad was a lobbyist back in the day, I think when legislators were around for a longer period of time, maybe set in their ways, both with knowledge and the way that they process the government. Today, with term limits, with some other changes, is that a role that you would play in that educational process and communicating and developing strategies?
Well, absolutely. So the legislative leadership program was explicitly designed in the wake of term limits. MPLP continues to get support in part because people know that we'll have to regularly refresh the legislature with new people who kind of bring less experience to the office. And we think that also makes the sort of institutional staff of the legislature more important. So we try to integrate the Legislative Service Bureau, the also national actors like National Conference of State Legislatures and the Council of State Governments that we bring in to speak to the legislative staff and the new legislators. And I think all of that can, and of course the resources of the university as well, and our researchers, all of that can kind of give a little bit more institutional knowledge and continuity, even if the legislatures switch over.
Beyond the borders of Michigan State, where would you collaborate in this process within the state of Michigan? Are there other universities? Are there other organizations that, that you're collaborating with in this process?
Yes. So, well, MPLP, first of all, is a weekend program that goes all around the state, okay. So they don't stay around here. We have collaborators for all of our projects. Mm-hmm. We just started a new survey panel of people who work in and around state government, and we're doing that in cooperation with U of M. We regularly involve people from other universities and around
sure.
the state.
Now, Matt, you're a scholar yourself, but Charlie Ballard, who coordinates the State of the State survey, gets a lot more airtime regarding his views than you might as a director. Tell people a little bit about the State of the State survey and what that means for information for the people of Michigan.
Yes, we have a regular ongoing survey that's on its 74th round, which gives people regular information about the state of politics and the economy in Michigan. And Charlie Ballard has really become associated with that as a spokesperson for trends in Michigan's economy and political views. I got to add some information in the latest election and some more political side of it. But we're happy to have the ongoing economic information as well.
You gave one of your new books to Mark and me, so we'll have a chance to learn a bit more from an academic perspective. It's called Asymmetric Politics. You want to?
Ideological Republicans and Group Interest Democrats. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so our view is that the two political parties are very different. The Republican Party is sort of united around broad principles and views about the size and scope of government, about the role of America in the world. And the Democratic Party is really a coalition of disparate social groups, each of which have a different policy concern. And we think that they operate quite differently, both in campaigns and government, and we sort of treat them as mirror images too often. But we also say that each party has a potential majority in the American public, and it's because we have a sort of a divided political mind. We agree with the Republicans in principle, but the Democrats often in practice. So public opinion kind of shares conservative, broad conservative views about government, but when it comes to policy specifics, often is more favorable toward the policy plans of the Democratic Party. And that means that both can win. It also means that there's a potential for backlash against both political parties.
But doesn't this also suggest that for those who might see themselves as, let's say, fiscally conservative, wanting to invest in America in different ways, but might see themselves as a bit more socially liberal? It presents kind of a conflict because sometimes you just talk past one another on these issues that may unite more of us than not.
Yeah, so we say that each party kind of misunderstands the other by thinking that it's like themselves. So the Republicans view themselves as advancing the cause of limited government, and so they believe that the Democratic Party is sort of out to expand government for its own sake, move America in a socialist direction. The Democrats see themselves as representing disadvantaged social groups, and so they think that the Republicans are out there reinforcing privilege for its own sake. And we don't think either of those conceptualizations is right. We think both of the parties are different and that they need to understand each other better in order to communicate.
Makes sense.
So what are some of the next projects you see on the horizon?
Well, we're very excited at IPSR about getting started with our legislative staff training to sort of fill in from our we're now doing two panels per semester with the legislative interns. We're going to be doing several with the legislative staff, and then we want to expand the legislative leadership program as well. We also have some new research projects. We have an ongoing big data compilation where we're collecting lots of information about policy differences across all 50 states over time. It's called the Correlates of State Policy, and it's available online for others to use. And we're using it to try to figure out what the big trends are in state policymaking and sort of what the consequences are of the Republican gains in state legislative elections around the country.
In terms of policy.
Yes.
So if you were to provide advice based on the research, I'm going to push you out here a little bit, about how we might be more aligned in terms of overall goals and potentially the capacity to find solutions that are more widely supported, because I think we all want a better America, a better Michigan, a better world. But are there some lessons from this research that are what you tell MPLP people that help us down that path without deciding what the answers will be? Because people often accuse academics of wanting to prescribe an answer.
Right. Well, on my research side, I would say the two parties do compromise. We tend to do it in a specific fashion. We tend to pursue Democratic goals through Republican means. So we try to address the concerns of Democratic constituencies, but we tend to do it through decentralization to state and local governments, through using the private sector, through contractors and our regulated markets. And we tend to do it through the tax code rather than through the direct appropriations. And so all of that results in a policy system that's pretty complicated rather than sort of just establishing a new bureaucracy to solve a particular goal. We tend to set up these regulated markets. You can see in Obamacare the kind of complicated system that we get. So we think that's a consequence of the two parties kind of pursuing divergent goals in government. They should sort of realize that it sometimes creates a pretty complex pie. On the actual sort of intervention of IPSR in the policy process, I think our main idea is just that if we can get a more professionalized staff, if we can get an infrastructure of people who know the policy history, know the policy differences, then they'll be able to create better policy. So on the downside, we have term limits, but on the upside, we have professionalized bill writing. We have some institutional staff that's been there for a long time. And so we want to take advantage of that. And the research shows that if you can get that kind of training, then you get policy that's less likely to be overturned by the courts, that's more likely to win awards, for example. And so we think there is hope, and some of it comes from just learning the basic information and applying it.
Yeah. I think it really comes down to how do you establish a common goal, and then the compromise really becomes much easier on the other issues. But the broadness of the nation or the broadness of the state make that a challenge sometimes because of the diversity in the interest that are out there. So it's a daunting task. There's no doubt about that. And it's incredible work that you're doing and very educational.
And we don't think the right answer is to sort of paper over our differences,
right,
or to pretend that there aren't big policy disputes that are based on people coming in from different principles. We think it's better to just work through what are those principles, what are those policy goals, and is there a way to bridge those differences.
How much time do you spend on the history part of governance, of going back in time and looking at how our nation was built, what the strength was, I guess, during our infancy, and how that correlates with what we're doing today?
Well, I don't go quite as far back to the foundings, but my last book before this one was on American policy change since 1945.
Okay.
And the big lesson from that was that it often takes individuals that have been in politics for a long time,
right,
and are motivated to compromise with other long-running policymakers in order to get policy done. So you often see these serial policymakers that were in it for a long time across issues. Areas and are successful because they're willing to work with anybody else who shares their goal of the moment and work hard on policy over an extended period.
How does that get through in a soundbite world of today? Because these are conversations that are simple in one level, but require patience and relationship building in another. And how do you think about that as we communicate in ever shorter time cycles. That's been happening for a long time. Everybody believes that the pace of acceleration of communication is going to just continue to accelerate. So it's not about any one person or their habits of communication. It's just that we're in an era where that speed is much more valued over a paragraph.
Well, absolutely, it's a challenge, there's some sort of sad history about political information, which is that the time when we were most informed about politics as a nation was in the 1970s, when there were only three channels and everybody had to watch the news because that's all that was on. And sort of once people had other choices, they chose sports and entertainment or kind of went on their way. That doesn't mean that there aren't
their internet browser made the decisions for them.
Exactly. So that's not to say there aren't opportunities. People are enrolling in education for longer. Some people are interested in reading long form articles as well. But we tend to be dividing now between kind of a hyper informed and more partisan elite and a lot of folks that don't pay attention until the last few months of the election.
One of my friends who thinks about the computer part of this, because they're really ubiquitous in whatever age group we are right now, said that one of the requirements of certain websites should be that if you looked at website X for this piece of news, instead of the search engine sending you to three more that have the same views, it should flip you over and you should have to at least have one contrary view, whatever that is, to read, and then you can go back to your preferences about from whom you get your news. But you have to every once in a while listen to somebody that you don't agree with. And that really has been the essence, I think, of MPLP, the leadership program, all those things, is that capacity to listen to people you don't agree with. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is some interesting data from social media which suggests that people do occasionally hear contrary views if they're following any kind of political news. The challenge is that even when you do hear contrary information, people are coming at it from their own perspective. They're counter-arguing the information. And so even kind of hearing the alternative doesn't necessarily make you open to it. So I really think it takes these kind of opportunities where you get to know someone, you develop a personal tie, and then you see where they're coming from in order to sort of really see the merits of the other side.
It's sort of the modern day equivalent of having no term limits on communication, right?
Yes. Now, we in the book, we actually tell an interesting story about the two parties' differences in information that basically in both media and university research, there was a correct perception on the Republican side that reporters and academics were disproportionately liberals and Democrats. And as a result, they sort of built these ideological alternatives in the media. We see with Fox News and talk radio. In universities, it was really sort of the think tank a world where elites were drawing information more directly from those sources. And so, as I'm sure you experienced, we kind of face this challenge every day of both being an independent provider of information, but also now being seen by one side as sort of favoring a broad ideological perspective.
Well, Matt, we thank you for joining us. This is very topical, I think, right now, not only in our state, but across the country, and very informative. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being a part of Michigan State.
Thanks,
Matt.
Thank
you.